Welcome to the U-Turn Podcast. This is the place to connect to who you truly are. We're bringing PhDs, experts, and leaders to help you elevate your mindset in your work life and in your love life so that you can see things differently and truly love your world. I'm Ashley Stahl. I'm a career expert, author, and TEDx speechwriter and booker, and I'm excited to bring you in to this week's episode. Hey, U-Turn friends, it's Ashley Stahl here, and today we are bringing you a total U-Turn podcast throwback. We love bringing old episodes that got great downloads and a lot of inspiration and a lot of impact back to you. So enjoy without further ado, and I can't wait to hear what you think. Hey everybody, it's Ash, and I'm here with Nora DeKaiser. She's a matchmaker to successful women and a relationship coach. Obviously, you all know me, and I'm, you know, picking her brain before this interview even starts because I'm so excited to jump into this. So while we get started, I want you to have your pen and pad ready because we're going to talk about the key ingredients to finding a compatible relationship. So Nora, thank you so much for being here with me.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. What a useful topic. And I know not everybody listening to U-Turn Podcast is single, but I also know that a lot of people probably aren't in a relationship where they feel like it's compatible and they're noticing because things are really hard. So I'm so curious, you know, before we get into your story, like just for everybody listening, what are some signs that you're not in a compatible relationship? Maybe they're kind of sneaky little signs.
Oh yeah. No, that's a really good question. A lot of people are actually in relationships that they're unhappy with, but we don't realize that on a conscious level. So some of the signs that are telltale signs that you are not happy is when you're comparing. So when you see your friend get a present from her boyfriend, and then you feel this kind of lack in your own heart, and then start diagnosing everything with your relationship and kind of freaking out, that's an easy sign that you are not happy. Mm-hmm. Another really big sign specifically for women is when we push our emotions down. So when something happens between you and your partner and you just kind of tell yourself, oh, this is nothing, it's little, just don't think about it, it's not that big of a deal, I'm so lucky to be with this guy. It's important to keep positive and not overanalyze everything in your relationship. But if that's a consistency, if once a week you're pushing something down and not expressing your full vulnerable heart, then you are definitely probably not in the right relationship.
And I think the concept of fighting is really, really interesting because a lot of people sometimes, I've heard a lot of different opinions. On one hand, I've heard if you're not fighting at all, that's not a good thing because that just means that you're not stepping into your individuality. Like I've heard that belief. And then I've also heard, you know, sometimes when you're fighting, it's just that one person hasn't grown at a level where they can, you know, have the conversation. For example, I dated a guy who was really uncomfortable with communication. So he thought our relationship was really hard, but it was hard because anytime I would try to communicate, he would shut down. That was my belief. So I don't know if I co-created that or what. But I think a lot of people, there's some confusion around fighting. Like, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? How much is too much? You know?
Yeah, no. I mean, in terms of fighting, that's kind of what I just touched on right before that is if you're pushing it down and you're not fighting, that's almost worse than communicating and actually fighting. So in your past relationship, it was good that you wanted to talk and communicate. He probably was shutting down because he felt as though he was doing something wrong. And I don't know how you approached the fight. I'm sure you're very communicative and open, but oftentimes women in our natural state, we tend to come off as nagging and a little bit negative. And the moment that happens, a guy will shut down no matter what, no matter if he is very emotionally aware and very interested and excited to be with you. When he feels like you're nagging, he almost feels as if his mother is nagging him to clean his room, as an example. So my biggest piece of advice with that, if you really think you are with the right guy and you really do love him, come at that fight with love. So come towards him saying, I love our relationship. I love the way that you treat me. And I love when we do this together. But sometimes when this happens, it hurts me. And I know that you love me and I know you don't want to hurt me. So I wanted to talk about that. When you come in that way, the man is going to feel very safe and not as if you're nagging him or telling him what to do, he'll see your heart. He'll see your rawness. He'll see your vulnerability. And if he's a good guy, he's going to hold that space and he's going to hold your heart. And he's going to hold that and respect that. If he's not a good guy, if he shuts that down, then you have your answer and you know that, okay, if he's this avoidant to talk about this, we're never going to be able to get through having kids together, having a long-term relationship together. And I would get out as soon as you can.
Okay. So this points to us eventually talking about attachment styles. And before we do, I'm curious if you could briefly just loop everybody in, like, why are you a matchmaker? What was your journey with love that brought you here? Because this is such a fascinating career path. You know, almost as fascinating as the other day, me meeting a taste tester.
For
a granola bar company. I was like, well, that sounds like a great time.
Wow, that would be an amazing job. I think it almost competes with being a matchmaker.
I know, he's crushing it, but obviously so are you. So I'm so curious what got you here.
Yeah, I think I was destined to be a matchmaker. I've always been very curious about why people do what they do. I grew up with a mother as a therapist, so always kind of diagnosing people and understanding the reasons behind people's actions. But at 16 years old, I found myself in an incredibly emotionally abusive relationship. And I was in that for 3.5 years. That was my first experience of love. And when I got out of that relationship, I promised myself, I never want another woman to go through this. It was so painful. I was so young. And I was, you know, I was imprinted. That really affected me in a lot of different ways. So I went on my way. I didn't date for 5 years, really kind of found myself in undergrad. I doubled in psych and business. And then I worked in recruiting for many years in New York. And then I found this company called 3-Day Rule, and I became a matchmaker for them. And the job description was literally to become best friends with your clients, get to know them, work with them, build their confidence back up, and then match them successfully. So I've been a matchmaker for the past 4 years. I think it's my calling. I absolutely love it. But I've also realized that with a lot of my clients specifically, we can find their match. We can find the parameters of what they're looking for in a romantic partner. But oftentimes they don't keep that relationship because they haven't done the work on themselves. So if someone's looking for someone who works out 5 times a week, loves his job, and goes to church, then I ask her, okay, what's your workout regimen? They're like, oh, I don't really work out. And I'm like, okay, what's your job like? And they're like, oh, I don't love my job. I kind of hate my job. And I'm like, okay, do you go to church? And they're like, no. So I realized, okay, we've got to make you be attractive to the type of guy you want to find. So recently I've segued into coaching women on how to build up that confidence and how to become the most authentic version of themselves so that they can attract the most authentic relationship.
Beautiful. Okay. And well, has there been any, you know, beyond the emotional abuse in your teens, what was your journey like with finding love, or what did you learn about yourself that you think was the biggest gem for everybody listening?
That's such a good question. So my journey was pretty typical to a lot of women. So most women I see have a pattern in their past relationships. And whether that pattern starts from their experience with their family and their upbringing and that identification of love, or from their first real relationship, from their first love. So my pattern was, you know, I stayed in an emotionally abusive relationship for way too long. I didn't date for another 5 years after I got out of that. Wow. The next guy I met was the same. And I didn't realize he was the same kind of emotional abusive type until I was about 1.5 years in. And I stayed in that too for about 2.5 years. So we tend to attract that same pain that we've been through because it's comfortable.
This is so juicy.
Yeah. And we imprint that literally on our own body. So we're used to habits. We're comfortable with habits. And so that's why I was attracted to that guy. Even though he was presented in a different box, it looked different. I thought he was a completely different type of guy. I thought I had learned so much. But in reality, I had attracted that same pain that I had before and tried to fix it. So when I finally got out of that, is when I read a book called Attached by Amir Levine.
Love it.
And that's where I really learned about attachment styles. And that's when I diagnosed myself with having an anxious attachment style and diagnosed the men that I had dated with having an avoidant attachment style. And that's when I really changed and saw what I needed in a relationship, which was much different than I had ever experienced. And I got on the dating apps like everyone else, even though I'm a matchmaker. And that was nice because I was able to empathize with my own clients on what dating is like today, how hard it is, how many weirdos you meet. And I actually met my current boyfriend on Hinge, the dating app.
Amazing.
And that was an amazing relationship too, because I would have honestly probably never been initially attracted to him because he's extremely secure, as sad as that sounds, because I was so attracted to the avoidant. I was so attracted to the hard to get, the you have to work hard to get it, the game, the on and off. But my current boyfriend was very secure. And after reading that book and learning about different attachment styles, I identified him as that. And I knew, okay, this feels weird. I don't feel that insane kind of lust and craziness, but man, am I attracted to who he is and his values and what he offers and how he treats me. And now it's the most deep love I've ever experienced.
Wow, I love that. And I actually was just at a wellness conference and they did a panel on relationships, and there was like a senior researcher from Bumble there, and she was kind of like what we all visualize as like a senior researcher. Like she had like the whole look going and she was very official, and I could tell that she has done a shitload of research on dating. And she basically explained the past 2 years, 1 out of 3 people have found their partner on a dating app. And that to me is really inspiring. And I think a lot of people are like maybe intimidated by that. But to me, there's such an inspiration to being able to access people you otherwise would have never met before and have some level of preferences before you even connect with them. So that's inspiring that you yourself have experienced that. And I'm so curious to kind of get a little more in. And I know about the book Attached, and those of you listening, what an amazing book to read. But before we get into that, I'm so curious, going back to like, why do we attract the same types of people? And I know it has to do with your attachment style, but I know it also has to do with your imprint. So maybe your dad didn't pay attention to you and you're used to men who don't pay attention to you. Or maybe you had an emotionally abusive relationship and that was what imprinted you on what love is. So what is it about why we keep attracting the same types of people? Because God knows the same types of men are always coming into my life. And somehow they just get here. We don't know. And I'm so curious for everybody listening, if they start to notice like, wow, all of these matches that don't work for me are coming in and they're the same.
Yeah, for sure. So oftentimes ourselves, we are the worst at picking our own partners. And that's a true fact. So what I try to do as a matchmaker and as a coach when I meet new clients is we talk about their upbringing and what that communication style was between their parents and their parents to themselves. And that love style, was it a little bit distant and more practical and more business oriented? Was it unconditionally loving? Was it too loving? Was it too much? But ultimately, research has now shown that we choose our partners because of our childhood programming. And that can either be, again, from our parents and that first experience of love, or from a first intimate experience of love. So think the thing that you never got when we were young, when you were young, you're probably going to choose someone who won't give you that. And then you get to play it out again.
Wait, explain that a little bit more.
This time.
One more time. So the thing you got when you were young, can you unpack that a bit?
So the one thing that you never got when you were young. So say, for example, your dad was distant and worked a lot, or maybe your mother passed away. You'll always kind of feel that void and that pain. So what you'll do in adult relationships is you're going to try to choose someone who also won't give you that. So say your mother passed away, you'll try to find a partner, or your father passed away, you'll try to find a man, that is distant, that can't give you that love, that isn't really available because your dad was ultimately distant if he had passed away at a young age. And then you get to play out that scenario again and try to gain that power back, try to attract him, try to control him, try to make sure he's going to be there. So we literally try to form them into the space where they're doing the thing that was absent before.
Okay. So I know everybody listening has heard me many a time talk about when I was a little kid, my dad losing all of his money and being completely in a panic most of the time. Such a good dad, such a funny man, and to this day, completely out of control human in a funny way. But when I was a kid, I didn't get his presence. And even as an adult, he's on his phone quite a bit. You know, it's like we're at dinner and his head's down in his phone or looking at something. So I have tended to attract the kind of men who are a little bit different than him. They're a lot more sleek and polished. They look very like GQ magazine, and they're not as emotionally available, which my dad wasn't, you know, emotionally available to me because he was panicking. So I'm curious for anybody who's trying to unpack this. I'm looking at my own in hopes that maybe other people can kind of look at their dad or their first love. And why is it that it's your first love or your parents? Like, why isn't it one or the other?
So in terms of that, from my own example, I grew up in a family of very unconditional love, just constant all the time, secure. I always felt safe. So you'd think that I'd be able to be in relationships where they were very secure and have no problem. But the reason why it's either your upbringing with your family or your first love is because that's at such a young age, that's when you're most imprinted upon and you're very impressionable. So that's why it can be either or. But in terms of your experience with your dad, what's happening there is these men that you're dating are packaged in different wrapping paper. And so they might look different than your dad. They might act different than your dad. But ultimately, the way that you crave to be loved, what your heart is really wanting and yearning for, is someone who is present. And that's exactly why you're attracted to the guy who isn't able to give you that present presence. He might be working a lot or very focused on a book he's writing or his career or his family or his travels. So you're going to really be attracted to that because that's comfortable to you. That's what's been imprinted upon you. And that's what you understand and define as love. Anything else, someone who is really available to you right now might seem overwhelming. Seem like, oh God, he's too much. Like he's never going to be able to protect me because he's all over me. You know, he doesn't even have a backbone.
oh my God. I feel like I've said some like version of that in my head, but it's, or I'll find that I'm like, they're totally available. And I'm like, gosh, they're kind of boring.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly why it's so good to define exactly what you want in a relationship, the values that you're looking for and what's going to make you feel excited and attracted to that person. Because when you do that pragmatically, when you do that, as a tool before you actually meet the guy, then you'll be able to see it in the person. And even though it might seem boring and it's not on and off and you don't have to strive to make him interested in spending time with you, you'll realize the value in, but he does have this work ethic and he does have this humor and he does have this lifestyle. Those are my three top must-haves in a partner. So I'm going to keep going and it'll probably be a slow burning flame, but that's exactly what a good relationship is.
Okay. And I think attachment styles are so fascinating. I read the book Attached as well. And I literally ate that book for breakfast. Like I think I read it in one morning. And so I'm so curious to hear from you. And since I've read it as well, for everybody listening, whether you're in a relationship, whether you're single, your attachment style matters. So could you tell everybody and loop them in on what are the four attachment styles that the book covers?
Yeah. So the first attachment style is a secure attachment style. And when it comes to attachment styles, this is how you relate to a partner in a relationship. And just so everyone knows, this can change. In one relationship, you might have one attachment style. In a different relationship, you might have another one. Even on a day-to-day basis, this can change, but everyone has one dominant attachment style. So you all heard me explain my experience of love causing me to have an anxious attachment style. But my current relationship, I've now created a more secure attachment style because my partner has a secure attachment style. So the first attachment style is a secure attachment style. That's the one everyone should strive for. That is the most healthy type of relationship. You have a great advantage in love. So this type of person feels comfortable going to their partner when something is off. You give your partner absolute freedom. People tend to have honest, open, and equal relationships. On the flip side with the secure attachment style, there still can be conflict and bad days and you can still fight. That is completely normal. But what sets people apart with a secure attachment style is their higher emotional intelligence. that helps them communicate their feelings effectively rather than attacking their partners and saying that their partners is doing something wrong.
One of the things that I found really interesting is that, and obviously you guys can probably sense this as we're talking, is we're about to dive into the less secure attachment style, since there's only one secure attachment style. And what I found was so interesting about the book is that research indicates that if you have an insecure attachment style, and we'll go into what those look like, that if you are with somebody who has a secure attachment style, they're like a buffer zone, and you're more likely to become securely attached and change your way of attaching to people and attaching to your relationships to become more secure. So it's not only incredible for you to receive somebody who's securely attached, but it's incredible to change as a person and become more secure within yourself because you're with somebody that has that kind of effect on you. So that's cool.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened to me in my current relationship. I'm so thankful for him for that. But the sad part is, especially with women in today's society, they're not normally attracted to the secure guy. Oftentimes we are attracted to the push-pull and trying to make that man love you. And again, that goes back to our first experience of love in our upbringing or in our first experience of a relationship. But also society, really, how many songs are about getting him back, or how to get the guy, or movies about, you know, the one rule that you finally get to change the guy and he's perfect for you. It feels almost extra special to be attracted to someone who is hard to get and then make them love you. But my biggest piece of advice for women is that a cat doesn't change its stripes. You're never going to make him love you as much as you try and as much as he might be seeming to change. It's so much easier to go after the guy who is secure and isn't playing games.
And who knows how to love you. Yeah. And I, you know, I'm learning, like, commitment and loving somebody, it's a skill, and it's not one that everybody has cultivated fully. And looking at the other attachment styles, could you kind of do an overview for everybody listening so that they can self-identify which one they probably are?
Completely. So the other attachment style is an anxious attachment style. So this type of person tends to romanticize love because it's easier for them to form a fantasy bond with someone instead of something based off of a reality. So even if they are in a bit of a distant relationship or they're in a physically long distance relationship, they tend to be okay with it and they tend to be happy because they're able to tell themselves in their own brain, this is good and this is perfect, and they can post perfect pictures on social media. But really, this is oftentimes a fantasy, and they tend to be attracted to partners that they can save. So they tend to be attracted to men who are a little bit distant or who have some emotional baggage, or they also tend to be the type of person that wants to be saved. So either or is pretty common for someone who's anxious. Oftentimes they're demanding in a relationship, they're obsessive, they're clingy. And most ultimately, they mistake turbulent relationships for passion. So they think when they break up and then get back together, that is because that is the biggest, truest love they've ever had. It's so extreme. And that can actually trick our brains too. It's kind of like the love is a drug thing. That's when we feel that extreme passion, even though it's not healthy at all. And we know cognitively it's not healthy, but in our heart we feel like it's true passion. And these type of people can struggle from insecurities, low self-esteem, and the inability to establish a strong sense of self. So that's why listening to Ashley's podcast about confidence and going to seminars about just being authentically you is so important for someone who's anxious, because the stronger that you are in yourself, the less anxious you'll be.
It's so interesting. When I think of somebody who's anxiously attached, I just think of someone who spends a lot of time thinking about their relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. I was coaching a girl this morning, actually. She has gone out with this guy 3 times now, and they just had sex and it was all good. And he was giving her, you know, all these confidence boosters. Oh, I feel so connected with you. It's so easy with you. So simple. And now he's gone a little bit cold and a little bit distant. Yeah. So she's like, what do I do? And my biggest piece of advice there was, you know, they have a date planned. She was the one who asked for it, and he seemed a little bit aloof and preoccupied with something else, but he said, sure, I can go. So already she's freaking out.
Oh, come on.
And I said,
sure.
Yeah, focus on something that you're really passionate about. So for someone specifically who's anxious, you have to ground yourself. If you love yoga, do yoga every day that week. If you love business, dive into your business. And this isn't something to completely distract yourself from everything, but distract yourself from overanalyzing that relationship, because that guy is going to feel your energy. He's going to feel that anxiety. And that's going to make him run as far away as he can, because men really don't like to hold on to other people's emotions if they're not secure.
Wow, that is so interesting. And so for those of you listening, if you're wondering what your attachment style is, I would say secure is for the people who are comfortable with intimacy and comfortable with the emotional conversations and comfortable holding space for one another. Anxious are the people who are thinking a lot about their relationships, worried a lot about the relationship and trying to save somebody and fantasizing. And by the way, one thing you touched on, Nora, was what I would say I've read about in a journal, like a scientific journal called a trauma bond, that those high highs and those low lows actually have an impact on your brain, right? And they create all this dopamine. And by the way, I could be butchering the science here, but I know that this is the essence of it, that it creates all of this dopamine and a whole chemical feedback loop in your brain that creates that trauma bond, where it's almost like your body is physically reacting on a chemical level to the high highs and the low lows, where it actually becomes addictive.
Completely. Oh yeah. It's just like a drug. And that's exactly why people always say nice guys finish last, because if you've had any type of trauma in your, again, family upbringing or relationships, and trauma doesn't have to be something extreme. It can be as simple as your father was a little bit avoidant or a little bit busy with what's going on. That can be trauma as well. And so that's exactly why you're bonded and attracted to someone who has similar qualities, even when they're presented differently. That's what you define as love. And that's what's imprinted in your dopamine, in your brain as, oop, ding, this just went off. This is attraction. This is excitement. This is love. So that's a very hard cycle to go into. But after learning about these styles, attachment styles, oftentimes we're able to get out of that cycle. And even though that first relationship with someone secure might seem a little bit more boring or a little bit just not as exciting or not as deep of love, trust me, it will become so much more deep of a love once you actually go out after 5 dates, 6 dates, 7 dates, and actually get to know the person's spirit and their character and respect that and love that.
I'm also curious for everybody listening. So, okay, so maybe you're not feeling like you're secure. Maybe intimacy feels like a lot for you. Maybe you're not feeling anxious. Maybe you don't worry a lot about relationships. So what is the other two types of attachment styles for everybody listening?
Yeah, so the next two are avoidant attachment styles. And there's two different types of avoidance. The first is avoidant dismissive. So these people tend to be emotionally distant in relationships, but in terms of the way society sees them, they actually seem very successful because they come across as very self-sufficient, independent. They're oftentimes successful. A lot of CEOs are quite avoidant, dismissive because they've had to do everything on their own. It's a one-man show. Mm-hmm. But in intimate relationships, they can oftentimes avoid true, deep intimacy and fill that void with other things like sex. So someone who's avoidant, dismissive can oftentimes have a very sexual relationship with their partner, and the woman can think, wow, we're so connected. We have sex 3 times a day. But in reality, they're filling that void from being able to be emotionally attached to you with something physical. This can oftentimes also be in an excitement for you guys both really like to talk about your careers and you really connect on that level. That's amazing. But if he's not able to connect with you about his emotions and what he's feeling, if all you guys talk about is work, again, that's a good sign that he's trying to avoid that deeper intimacy and push himself away from being completely vulnerable with you.
Okay. So funny. I was listening to you talk about CEOs who are emotionally avoidant. And I'm like, girl, I've been there. I know all about those. God, sex 3 times a day. That sounds like a yeast infection. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Well, good for them.
But it's pretty common. I hear a lot of women say, well, we're just, I feel sad and I don't feel connected to my partner, but I know we are because we have sex this often. And I always say, for a woman, sex is something that can make you feel connected. But for a man, it's really easy for them to shut off their emotions and act like they don't care. And that sex is truly just a physical thing. But in reality, that's, you know, being able to shut off your emotions and not need to connect to someone on an intimate level is an illusion, because humans need connection in order to survive. So the avoidant dismissive has very few close relationships with others. And that's another sign to be able to realize, oof, he might be avoidant.
Hey, U-Turners, so sorry for the quick interruption, but I want to make sure you know that this episode has been brought to you by the Career Clarity Lab, the online course to help you find your career purpose in the workforce and upgrade your confidence. So if you're ready to unlock the best career path for you and you'd like to try a free version of our Clarity course, just head on over to uturnpodcast.com/clarity. That's uturnpodcast.com/clarity. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
And what is the final type of, and by the way, I love that we say he, because we're kind of like, eh, but I know a lot of girls who are avoidant as well. So fun disclaimer for everybody. And what's the final type, Nora?
Yeah, exactly. So the final type is an avoidant who is more fearful. So this type of person fears both being too close or too distant from their partner. And that can make them really unpredictable. This is oftentimes the personality that an anxious attachment style would probably be attracted to the most, because it's off and on, it's up and down. One week they are so into you, you guys are planning a trip together, you feel so connected. And the next week, they're hardly responding to your texts. You're super confused. You don't know where they went or where their head's at, but you're trying to fix it. And then you get more anxious. So they oftentimes have a struggle, an internal struggle, between being abandoned, and being confident in their partner and relying on their partner. So when they get too close to either of those spectrums, they kind of freak out and internalize everything.
And what is that type called? Avoidant?
Fearful.
Avoidant fearful. Okay. That sounds like a real shit storm for everybody involved.
Yeah. That's okay. Kind of the hurricane between someone who's anxious and someone who's avoidant.
Okay. And for everybody listening, I remember reading a study around this. And I'm sure Nora, you remember the same one, and they did it about babies and how babies behave when their mom leaves the room. And for the secure baby, the mom would leave the room, the baby would cry, the mom would return, and the baby would be happy. And then for the anxious baby, I remember reading that the baby would cry. And then when the mom returned, the baby would throw a tantrum and cry harder. And then I also read that when the avoidant baby had the mom come back in the room, so when the mom left, it would cry. And when the mom came back, it would show no response, like a non-responsive. But here's what was so fascinating to me about what I read, was that there was very similar brainwave activity in the avoidant baby and in the anxious baby, meaning like your body chemistry is going haywire pretty much in the same way, but externally it's looking different, which I found so interesting. I don't know what you have to say about this stuff, Nora, but I found it so fascinating. And I thought it'd be interesting to ask you, Nora, like, what is the healing opportunity for each of these attachment styles? So if you're secure, you know, thumbs up, go keep being secure. Good for you guys. But what about the anxious person, the avoidant dismissive, and the avoidant fearful person?
Yeah. So in terms of the study with the babies, that's so true. You have such a good memory. and the most interesting part about that is that's why oftentimes someone who's anxious is attracted to someone who's avoidant and vice versa, because they have similar fears and anxieties. They just express them in different ways. So a way to heal from that, especially if you are someone who's anxious or avoidant, is to understand that polarity is attractive. That's why men are attracted to women and vice versa most of the time, because men are most dominantly masculine and women are most dominantly feminine. And if we were exactly the same, that would be the case of having a best friend. And most people don't want to have sex with their best friend. So there is a beauty in that difference, and in the difference of being a little bit more anxious and a little bit more avoidant. It's fine to be that way, but you have to define it. If you are running around without defining it, you are running around letting your subconscious control everything in your life. And that is a really scary thing, because you're not living true to yourself and you're not living in control of yourself. Mm. So the first step to healing is to look at these four different attachment styles, define which one you actually are. I actually have a quiz on my website that you can take to help define which one you are if you don't already know from this discussion. And then working through that and being very vocal about that. So next time you are in a relationship, explaining that and saying, look, these have been my tendencies in the past. I just want you to know that. And so the next time you're in a fight, bring that up again and don't blame it. Don't use it as a crutch. Don't say, oh yeah, I was crazy because I'm anxious. Use it as, man, I'm really working through this and I want you to know about this. But I also want to take full responsibility for this and know that next time this happens, I'm even further along the path of getting past this and not letting this control me in a subconscious way. Mm. So that's some tools to help.
Beautiful. And I know that we had talked a little bit about the key ingredients to finding a compatible relationship. This has been such a rich discussion. Oh, and by the way, fun fact for those of you listening, whether you're single or you're in a relationship, I read that while 50% of people are securely, like they have a secure attachment style, and then the rest of the population is broken into the avoidant and the other avoidant and then the anxious. What's funny, I've also read is that, okay, so I think it's like 25% of people are avoidantly attached.
Yeah.
But I've read that more than half of the dating population is avoidant. And the reason is because most of the securely attached people are busy off being securely attached. So when you're in the dating pool, you're coming up against a blend of people who, of course, are securely attached, people who are anxiously attached, and an unusual amount of people who are avoidantly attached. That's why they're still in the dating pool. So interesting and also relevant for my next question again, which is what are those key steps everybody listening can take right now, whether they're married and they're asking these big questions to themselves? Like, I have a couple friends who are married, and if they listen to this, they're going to have a mental breakdown, which is all good. Breakdown, breakthrough. You guys know who you are. You'll call me after this. But I'm curious, what are a few steps everybody can take to kind of get that clarity on the right compatible relationship and how to find that or whether they're in that?
Yeah. So when I'm working with my clients, I break it down into you literally, everyone who's listening, take out a pen and a paper. That's what Ashley talked about in the beginning, because you have to write this down. You cannot keep this in your head. We think 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day, and 90% of those thoughts are repeated the next day. It's going to drive you nuts to go back and forth on what you're looking for, especially in today's dating society where we're on Bumble and we're swiping right on 30 guys a day. That's so confusing to remember what you're looking for. So what I do with every single client in our first meeting is we actually define what you're looking for. So I don't know, Ashley, if you want to do this with me right now, this might help you in your dating scheme, but I'd love to know what your top three must-haves are in a partner. So, okay. And that can be, those are really big things. That can be if religion matters to you at all, if work ethic or drive or their career matters to you, if their family or a future family, if you want kids, matters to you. These are big qualities that you must have in a future partner.
Okay, so everybody listening, step one, what are the top must-haves, the top three? Okay, so I would say
it could be three to five, but okay, good. I usually try to dumb it down to three.
Okay, I definitely want to have a family, so they have to want to have kids or it's just not even going to happen. Also, I don't know if this is more in the realm of deal breakers, because to me, like, I can't deal with somebody who's super religious because I'm really spiritually open. So I don't know if it's a must have that they're spiritually open or just a deal breaker if they're super religious. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. So that would be a deal breaker. So what we'll do right now, so everyone knows kind of bigger picture of what I'm doing with Ashley, is we'll do her top three to five must haves in a partner, her top three to five like to haves, and then her top three to five deal breakers. So if it's a negative, so if you don't want someone who's religious, that's going to be a deal breaker, versus a positive, you want someone who wants kids, that's going to be a must have.
Okay. This is so interesting. I would say another must have is humor. Like, I don't know if it's humor or just easygoing where they can have a laugh. They don't, I'm pretty, I don't, you know, if I don't say so myself, Nora, I'm pretty funny. So I think I just need somebody that isn't going to look at me all kind of disengaged, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
or if they need to be funny.
That's energy.
Keep
humor
up.
Is so important. Whenever I'm matching two people up, I always ask their humor style, because everyone has different humor. But what you just described is more of a lighthearted, being able to laugh at yourself when you mess up, that type of humor. Some other people really want like this dry, witty, sarcastic humor. And not that you don't appreciate that, but the type of humor you just described is more of an energy of the way he holds himself.
Yeah,
so again, not taking life too seriously.
Yeah, exactly. Whenever I meet somebody, I've been out with like surgeons before, and like, I don't know what it is with those two in particular, but I was just like, wow, they are so serious. Like everything feels very life or death right now here at the pizzeria.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right. Do we want the pepperoni or do we want the cheese? We have to decide.
I know.
No, but that's super important. And that's really great that you already know that about yourself, because a lot of people have a hard time putting that into words. And that's why this practice is so helpful. Because what you just described with that surgeon, he's going to be a better fit with someone who's a little bit more serious, Ooh. A little bit more pragmatic and constantly kind of just on an energy level that's a little bit lower than someone who's a little bit more goofy and playful and likes to dance and likes to play. You're going to be attracted to someone who has that energy a little bit higher.
Okay. Well, and then I would also say somebody who has their career in order, like, because I've career coached for so long, I feel like I can fix somebody's career. And so it's just like the worst energy if somebody comes in and they're like, I'm trying to figure this out. And I'm like, let me do it for you. No problem.
So that's huge too. And that's so important. Men, specifically men, are very linear. They think of one thing at a time. And I always say men have a red light or a green light in terms of being ready for a relationship. Women, we always have a green light. We love love. We love companionship. We can do multiple things at the same time. We can build our career and have a very deep relationship. But men, most men, are unable to connect on a deep level until they've got their shit together with their career.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing you touched on is when someone kind of needs you. So the number one thing that women want in a relationship is to feel protected, is to feel safe. That's why we generally are attracted to kind of more of a masculine energy that's going to walk on the side of the street that the cars are on and make you feel protected. The number one thing that men want in a relationship is to feel needed, is to feel like the woman needs them for some reason to feel safe. So what happened in that explanation of a guy who doesn't know what he's doing with his career, and you are specifically a career coach, is that he needs you, and those roles are reversed. And so that's when you feel, you know, you might emasculate him a little bit and you feel very uneasy because that's not your natural tendency. In the same way that if someone was a producer and they were dating an actor, that would feel off because the actor might need that producer's help. You never want to be in a relationship where you actually need their help and the roles are reversed.
Yeah, yeah. That was why I called off my wedding to somebody who I was with for 5 years. Great guy.
Wow.
But I just felt like I needed to step in too often. And I think it created a lack of safety on my side. That's
interesting.
And then also I think attraction, which I think is really interesting to ask you about here, because I think everybody listening while they have their pen out with me here right now, it's like Ashley figuring out her life with everybody on U-Turn podcast. But, you know, the top three must-haves, it's like attraction feels like such a given must-have. And I've found my relationship with being attracted to somebody to be really confusing, because sometimes I'm like, wow, if they're amazing and I think they're like, I'm not attracted to them, but maybe I could be. But I found that those always end up kind of disappointing me. And it's either there or it's not the moment they walk in the room. What is your thought on that?
Yeah, no, I'm so happy you touched on that, because it's really interesting when I said, okay, so what are your top three must-haves? You didn't even bring up attraction. And the interesting thing is that I talk and I work with both men and women, and a lot of women get in their head that men just want the hottest thing that they can get. And that is not true. In 4 years of doing this, I have asked every man I've worked with, so what are your top three must-haves? And the number one must-have that they say they want in a woman is someone who's confident. And then they go on to things, someone who's passionate about what she does, someone who's loving and kind. Those are normally the top three things that men ask for. They don't even bring up attraction either, because attraction, as important as it is, and it of course has to be there, It's going to be so much more fulfilled when they have those other top three values. So at the end of the day, if you are talking to someone and you're just so not attracted to him, it's never going to happen. So don't push yourself to marry someone that you have absolutely no physical attraction to. But at the same time, the hard thing about online dating is that we swipe left just from a photo. So I really advise people to swipe right on more people, and then stalk them. Look on Instagram, look on social media, check out what they do for a living and how they are with their friends and what they do on a Saturday. Do they drink a lot or are they going to kind of self-betterment things on the weekend? So those type of things are going to make you feel more or less attracted to someone. As long as you have that initial, okay, he's okay. Give it a shot and see if he has those other values.
This is so good. Okay. So now that I have four, which is like kids, easygoing, career success, attraction, like from there, you were saying the next step for everybody who has their notepad out is to give their top three would like to have.
Yes.
Okay.
So these are kind of, they can seem easier and they can oftentimes seem silly, but these are ones that, you know, I hear a lot of women say, I'd like to have someone who's 6 foot plus. And that's great. So you can put that in like to have, or some people say, I'd like to have someone who salsa dances, if you salsa dance, or I'd like to have someone who surfs. Those are all great things and definitely focus on those. Don't ignore those or act like those don't matter. But if you're dating someone and he has your top three to five must-haves, but he doesn't surf, that's going to be something that you can say, okay, well, you know, that's a like to have. And although he doesn't have it, God, I'm still really attracted to him because he has these top five must-haves. Like to haves can also change with how you change. In one season of your life, you might be really into hiking. And then the next season of your life, you might be really into traveling. So these are things that are nice to have, but don't need to be in the relationship.
Okay. Got it. So I would say this is actually really challenging. This is to me the hardest one. And for anybody listening, I wonder if it's the same for them, because I think it's easy to be like, I have to have this. And then it's harder to be like, these would be nice, because there's a lot of things that would be nice, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you can make this list long. There's no rules for this. The biggest reason why I do this is the same way when someone is trying to figure out what they're doing with their career. And you ask them, well, what do you like to do? What are you best at? And they don't know. Then it's impossible to know what career they should go for. Same thing with dating. If you don't know what you want, it's going to be hard to find. And that's why online dating is so difficult, because we swipe right, we go on the first date and we're like, yeah, it was nice. And then it fizzles out because you don't even know what you're looking for. So this can be as long as you want it to be.
Okay, got it. So this one feels kind of like a free for all. So I can just put anything, like a generous person, somebody who likes personal development. Okay, great.
Yeah.
And then but how do you narrow that down? I guess it's just, you know, everything beyond the top three or five non-negotiables are just treats at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I would recommend people just like free for all, write it down so you can get it out there and actually start to mentally idealize what an ideal person is for you. Because again, it's hard to describe a fictitious person. And so oftentimes what we do is go backwards and start to think about an ex and think, well, my ex did this, so I liked this. And then you think you're attracted to those same qualities. Get that out of your head and just really freely write what you would like to have in a relationship. And then you can try to number them. So you can go between one and two and say, if my partner is always into surfing, but never likes to hike, does that bother you? And then you'll realize, okay, shit, hiking is more important to me than surfing. So I'll put the hiking higher than the surfing.
Yeah, this is actually really funny, because I took note that your final thing for everybody to write down in these three steps. So step one, top three to five deal breakers, must-haves.
Yep.
Step two, the top three would like to have, and you could write everything down and then rank it. And then step three, you said the top three deal breakers. And ironically, one of my deal breakers, this is so funny, is like somebody who's really into adventure.
Like, amazing. That's so helpful, though, that you know that about yourself.
Like, I'm like, I don't want to ski and go quadding and like skydiving, like, or scuba. Like, that sounds like my worst nightmare. Like, those guys who can't seem to relax. So I'm sure everybody, maybe they have a different take on this. But I'm curious, like, how do we get started with this? Because sometimes it feels petty to be like, that's a deal breaker, you know? But
that's exactly why this practice is so helpful. And it's so helpful to do it on your own by yourself. where you're not judged by other people. So Ashley, I know this is a little.
I know. I'm like, well, you know, about 30,000 people judging this month. No problem.
but that's exactly why this is so helpful for everyone who's listening to actually write it down in a quiet place by yourself. Because what you just said is really true to you, who you are and what you like to do for fun and how you spend your time. I met a man yesterday that I'm working with that one of his top threes was adventure, was someone who says yes to everything, who will go on a trip tomorrow to Cambodia and go skydiving. So that's definitely not your guy.
I'll go on the trip and stay in the hotel room. No problem.
And she's like, I'll stay at the Ritz.
Yeah. No problem.
So that's really great that you know that. Oftentimes deal breakers are lifestyle things. So again, religion, politics, how you spend your time, drinking or not drinking, drugs or not drugs, spending time with family or not spending time with family, spending time with friends or not spending time with friends. This is oftentimes those kind of lifestyle things that make someone compatible with someone else.
Great. Okay. So somebody writes all of these things down, but here's what I found is that people will be like, this guy's amazing. You know, like I'll have a friend. I'll be like, how's that going with that new guy? And they're like, he's amazing except for this one thing. And the one thing is like kind of a big fucking deal. So they'll be like, he's amazing except for his anger problem. And I'm like, that's like saying he's amazing except for every cell of his DNA that is duplicated with this in all of his bloodstream. Like, so what are your recommendations for, because I know that everybody listening right now, they're writing down their non-negotiables, including me. You know, their must-haves. That's a much better way to say it, I guess. But every now and again, there's something that you didn't know was a deal breaker, or yeah. I don't know, maybe it's not a deal breaker, but it's a huge pain in the ass and you're not happy. I don't know. How do you figure that out?
So that kind of goes back to what we were talking about initially in our conversation, is that we tend to be attracted to traumas that we've had in the past without realizing it. And we oftentimes tend to be the worst judge for if a partner is right for us. So that's when it comes to have good friends, or working with a relationship coach, because relationships are really hard. It's really hard to define if this is right or if this is wrong. And everyone gets rose-colored glasses. So everyone gets excited and sees all of the positives, but he sometimes lashes out on me and is really mean, but it's only once a week. So that's when you can work with a coach or talk to friends, but I usually recommend talking to someone who's a little bit more of a professional in this sense, to figure out why you're okay with disrespecting yourself in that way. Mm. The hard part about dating is everyone does go into dating a little bit fearful, so that when they are with someone, they hold on to it, even if it's shitty. Yeah. Because they're scared of the unknown in going back into the dating world. No one wants to go back on the dating apps. But I always tell people, if you're single, you are two steps ahead of the person who's in a shitty relationship. The person who's in a shitty relationship, one, has to define that they're in a bad relationship. Two, has to get out of it and emotionally heal, which takes a lot of time. And then three is single and has to start dating again. So yeah. The person who's single, be confident in that, believe in that, and be proud of yourself for being single and not settling, because you're really so many steps ahead of someone who might be married and in a really bad relationship.
So good. Final question is, you know, what are some interesting, because what I've gathered from listening to you and other relationship experts we brought on the show is that sometimes when you find the right thing, it doesn't always feel as quote unquote right as all the other wounded attractions might feel.
Exactly.
You know, because we've been wounded by our upbringing in some way if we haven't looked at it and we're playing something out. And so the feeling of playing something out, I've heard a lot in personal development, the stronger the attraction, the bigger the wound.
Yeah.
And
I love that.
I'm so curious from your standpoint, you know, how do we show up with new people or in our relationship and figure out when it's right versus wrong? Because, for example, I'll meet somebody new and they have all the things and I'm bored, but they're a really good looking guy. I'm attracted to the guy, but it's like, this feels like medium. I want steam. I want passion. And then I'm like, wait a minute, is this wounded? Am I just going back to my old ways? So how do we figure out that line of like, this is the good kind of new, and we feel different about this guy, and we can't tell if it's good, different, or bad, different, but it feels different. And sometimes people will interpret that and say, I don't think I should keep dating him. I'm not excited enough about him. So how do we navigate that?
Yeah. So in terms of that, I want everyone to remember that what's different, what we're not used to, is going to be uncomfortable no matter what. So remember that when you're dating someone and he's wooing you over and he's so sexually amazing and everything's amazing, oftentimes that's because he's amazing with every girl he's with. So don't get tricked by that. And don't get caught up in that and thinking that that off and on or very intense sex or intense love is perfect, because oftentimes there's a bit of a red flag with that. I do think that the slow burning flame is more powerful because you're being more intentional about who you're dating. So if you are dating someone and you're like, oh, like everything seems right, he's cute, I'm attracted to him, but I'm just bored, go back to this list that we just made today and look at your top five must-haves. Does he have them? And this guy that you were talking to, he might not have that lighthearted playfulness that you're really attracted to. That might be the identifying factor that you've been missing, that you know is somewhere in your brain and you can feel it, but you're not able to identify it. When you go back to this list, you'll see it right there written out. So keep this list, and you'll be able to define that. And you'll be able to realize, although he's an amazing guy, he has most of the qualities I want, he is not lighthearted, he is not playful, he's never going to go dance with me at 2 a.m. on a weekend. Unfortunately, he's not my guy. He'll be great for someone else. And I'm getting closer. So pat yourself on the back for that. But he has to have those top five must-haves. He has to have them.
This is such a great conversation. Where can everybody find you and learn from you?
Yeah, you can find me at noradekaiser.com. And I'll put I have a quiz on there for attachment styles. So I think that's really going to help you guys out. It truly changed my life with my own relationship. So I encourage you all to take that quiz to be able to identify which attachment style you have and then be able to move forward with it and hopefully find your dream guy. Relationships are so beautiful and so exciting to have. And my biggest hope and mission in life is for everyone to have a true love that is real and raw and authentic, and not something that we're trying to control.
Oh, thank you so much for being on the show. This was so great.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into the U-Turn podcast. And thank you again so much for our sponsors. We are here because of you. And to our listeners, thank you for checking out our sponsors. We always pick people and brands that we trust and we believe in. And just for listening to the show, writing your reviews on the Apple app, and just being willing to make your own U-turns. We'll see you next week.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.